Welcome to
America's Cannabis Conversation,
where you can hear experts from all facets of the cannabis business as to what's happening in this exploding industry. Keep yourself informed. Join the conversation. Hello and welcome to American Cannabis Conversation. Quick news, I'm your host, Dan Perkins. St. Paul, Minnesota. Minnesota marijuana legalization bill gets first hearing next week. A bill to legalize marijuana in Minnesota will receive its first hearing in the House committee next week, and legislative leaders are encouraging the public to participate as they solicit testimony on the proposal. The announcement comes about a week after the cannabis reform legislation was filed by House Majority Leader Ryan Winkler and the Speaker Melissa Hortman, among other lawmakers. It would allow adults 21 and older to purchase and possess up to 1.5 ounces of cannabis and cultivate up to 8 plants, 4 of which could be mature. The House Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee will meet to consider the bill on February the 17th. Representative Zach Stevenson, who chairs that panel, said in a statement that as a former prosecutor, he has seen firsthand the amount of resources the state expends on current cannabis restrictions. We ought to be strategic in where these resources are going so we can be efficient in how we address more pressing public safety needs. Winkler said that the state existing marijuana laws are doing more harm than good, and that a responsibly regulated market is better than an illegal market. With neighboring states like South Dakota approving adult use cannabis by voter referendum, we must make policy that serves Minnesotans properly. Under the proposal, social equity would be prioritized in part by ensuring diverse licensing and preventing the market from being monopolized by corporate players. Prior marijuana records would also be automatically expunged. Des Moines, Iowa. Iowa senators approve a bill to slash medical marijuana patient and provider fees. Iowans would have to pay only $10 every 2 years for a medical cannabis card that now costs $100 a year under the bill advancing in the Iowa Senate. However, lawmakers on the Senate subcommittee agreed this past week that fees, along with other parts of the bill, may need changes in order to make sure the program continues to cover the cost of state administration and testing. Representatives of the Iowa Department of Public Health and the University of Iowa, which operate the state hygienic lab, raises concern about the cut in fees would leave them without enough revenue to pay for the operating of their program. Senate Study Bill 1177 would slash fees paid by the manufacturers of medical cannabis to $2,000 a year and create an income tax deduction for business expenses associated with the manufacturing or dispensing of medical cannabis. Sales taxes from medical cannabis would be diverted to pay for state administration and testing. Sales last year totaled about $3.5 million, up from $2.2 million in 2019. The state expects increases to continue. A 6% sales tax would generate $210,000 a year at the current sales level. Senator Joe Bulkman of Iowa City supported the bill, but he said that the Iowa Department of Public Health currently receives about $600,000 to $700,000 a year to administer the program. He noted that lawmakers specified that when they created the program, they would have to be self-sustaining. During the pandemic, he said, lawmakers would not want the department cannibalizing other parts of its operation to pay for medical cannabis administration. He said while he believes the $100 annual fee for medical cannabis card is too high, $10 every 2 years might be too low, given the need to pay for program costs. And our final story comes from Washington, D.C. Key Senate Chairman previews plan to advance federal marijuana legalization this session. The chairman of a key Senate committee, who recently joined with the other Democrat leaders to lay out a process for shaping a federal marijuana legalization bill, tackling a number of issues such as cannabis tax policy and regulation. Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, who assumed the top spot in the Senate Finance Committee under the chamber's new Democratic majority, said his goal would be to end the prohibition and come up with a sensible tax and regulatory oversight for the federal government. This is a framework that I've championed, and I'll be championing it as chairman. You do that, and you take care of the banking question, you take care of the tax question, you take care of the research issue, and this whole array of issues that have been gridlocked because of federal government position on cannabis has been tethered to yesteryear. This has been the central problem. While Wyden didn't point out to any specific bills, there are numerous pieces of legislation that could fall within the committee's jurisdiction. That includes comprehensive proposal for federally legalized cannabis that would involve imposing excise taxes on marijuana sales, for example. The Senate version of the House bill passed to deschedule marijuana and fund programs to repair the harms of the drug war was referred to the Finance Committee last session, but died without a hearing or a vote under Republican leadership. The new chairman said, "It's not enough, in my view, to just end cannabis prohibition. I think we need to restore the lives of people who've been hurt the most by failed war on drugs, especially Black Americans." And this has been your quick news update on American Cannabis Conversation. I'm Dan Perkins. Now let's see who's joining us in the conversation this week. First up is Joe Dowling, the CEO of CV Sciences, a major sponsor on this network. And he's going to talk about what's going on in his company and how he's helping his employees protect themselves, giving away to his employees for free CV Defense and CV Acute products. Next, we have Morgan Fox from the National Cannabis Industry Association, and we brought him on to talk about all the traffic that's going on in Washington about possible deregulation of cannabis, a hot issue, lots to talk about. Up in the third spot is our old friend Dr. Jordan Tischler, our cannabis doctor on call, and he's going to talk about pain management and how cannabis can be used to help control pain. And finally, Mike Regan joins with his new partner, Colin Farron, who was going to talk about what's happening in the cannabis industry, especially as it relates to the pandemic and what's happening in the marketplace because of all the talk about deregulation. So let's get this conversation started. I'm Dan Perkins. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome back to the conversation, and joining us today is a gentleman who's been on the show before, Joe Dowling, who's the CEO of CV Sciences, a major sponsor on our network with CV Defense and CV Acute antiviral nutrients that can be taken as supplements to help strengthen the immune system of your body. And one of the reasons why I wanted Joe to come back on is he told us a little bit about what he's doing at his company and what he's doing for his employees first and for shareholders, and that's distributing the CV Acute and CV Defense to his employees for free. Joe, thank you for coming on the show today.
Glad to be back, Dan. Thank you.
I was so impressed in that last conversation about what you had decided as the principal officer of the corporation, what you did. And I'd like you to spend a moment or two just explaining to the audience, especially those people who are small businesses who desperately need employees to survive, what was the driving force in making the decision you made about giving away your product free to your employees?
Well, we believe so strongly in the product itself. We know, for example, that doctors are using our products as treatment. That's not an area that we can go in, but we do know that making sure that whether it's a customer or one of our employees, that they have access to what we think is an incredible supplement for providing immune support, and the high quality of the product itself is really, really clear, backed by science. But making sure that our employees are healthy is a critical component to our success, and it just made all the sense in the world to provide these products for free to our employees to make sure that they could, you know, be at peak health and really promote self-care, and we think this is part of that.
Well, in our last conversation, you talked about if you lose a person on a shift, especially in the shipping dock, you may create a problem where you can't ship anything. And so there are all jobs are critical, but there are certain areas of your company that you designated as being very important, and you decided to make sure that these people had it because perhaps the survival of your company may be at stake if you didn't do it.
That's right. So if you have a functional area of the company that cannot work remote, for example, you can't have people in the warehouse be remote if you want to make sure that products are shipped out. And so if one person in the warehouse gets sick, that one person could potentially take everyone down and infect everybody. So it's really, really critical to make sure that, among other things, you're making sure that they have access to products like CB Defense. And so we think it's just a good business decision to make sure that our employees are healthy. We're doing all the other obvious things in terms of making sure that people socially distance and mask, and we're doing platooning with our certain functional areas like our warehouse. Even doing all those things, you're still at risk. And so we want to make sure that we take every option to keep our people healthy, including our own product.
You happen to be in San Diego, California, and California is a hot spot at the moment for the expansion of the virus. That's got to cause some concern for you, because when your people leave your shop and go out into the public lands, they could easily be exposed to the virus from casual acquaintances or just being close to somebody. So the idea that you have this supplement that can protect them while they're away from the...
Well, we can't control what they do when they are not here, that's for sure. And we can do everything we can to encourage them to really behave. And we think they do. We think we have a great workforce that really has taken the right precautions during this pandemic. And so we've been very fortunate in terms of not having any infections in our warehouse. And that's probably the area where we have the greatest risk. But you're absolutely right. They can pick up infection outside of the workplace and bring it in to our facility, and it can be really, really damaging.
So we've got about a minute left in this segment. I'm curious, and we can continue it afterwards in the next segment, but I'm curious as to what would you say to small business people who may be hearing what you're doing for the first time? What would you say to them? Should they consider?
Well, we think it'd be great, and it's a smart move, we believe, for all businesses to really encourage self-care and access to products like CB Defense. We think it really makes so much sense to, even if they're going to, as a benefit, buy products like this and make them available to their employees, that is really just a smart business move with a good return. And that return is really simple: employee health and good health and, you know, fewer absences and greater productivity while at work. So we just think, you know, that kind of a program that we're doing here internally, making this available to our employees, is a smart business move for other small businesses to consider.
Well, we're out of time for this particular segment, but we're going to continue the conversation with Joe Dowling, the CEO of CV Sciences, after this commercial break. We'll be right back.
It's time for you to make a decision about your health care. It's time for you to make a decision on how you're going to protect yourself against viruses. Isn't it time to make sure you have the strongest immune system you possibly can? Isn't it time to make a decision to buy CV Sciences CV Acute and CV Defense to help you build the strongest antiviral immune system you can? It's time for you to go to empoweryourself.info and purchase CV Acute and CV Defense and take charge of your health care.
Welcome back to the conversation with Joe Dowling, the CEO of CV Sciences. And he just started talking about what he would say to other small business people about the decisions that he made, and was about providing the CV Acute and CV Defense products to all of his employees for free. When you look at it, one of the things that the point you made at the last time we had you on the show, which we haven't talked about yet, is what's the cost-benefit analysis of you providing the CV Acute and CV Defense for your employees? And in turn, how would another company look at the cost benefit? Would it look at it different than you, or what you're doing is pretty much standard? Tell us about the cost benefit analysis that you did.
It's really simple, Dan. If you think about our product, CV Defense, think about that the cost benefit of having someone be down even a single day, and the productivity loss from a whole day of, you know, whether it's someone in our warehouse or someone in our quality system or sales or marketing or anyone really, a little more than a dollar a day is a lot less than losing 8 hours of productive time of any one of our employees. So just from a cost-benefit analysis, this was a really easy decision, and I think an easy decision for other, even smaller or larger employers to consider for their employees. We're interesting, on the way into work today, I was listening to the radio, and I'm already hearing about companies that are increasing benefits, exactly what I'm referring to, for their employees to stay healthy, whether it's to go see a doctor or to supplement or to stop smoking or to whatever it is. And they're paying them to adopt, you know, such self-clue that as part of their lives. And so this isn't something that I think is going to go away. I think it's going to be a trend that, it, you know, is continues well beyond this pandemic.
The beauty of your product, CV Defense and CV Acute, I see it. I'm not a doctor or a medical professional, just a talk show host with interest in this subject matter. But am I incorrect that your product not only works against the COVID-19 protection, but also flu, influenza, and other viruses that could attack the body?
Well, that's a really good question, Dan, and it's a tricky one for us. And let me answer it this way. We know, and I think I mentioned this on the last segment, we know that doctors, physicians, MDs, are using our products, our CV Defense and Acute product, as treatment. We can't do that. What we can do as a company is to make sure that we're providing the highest quality product, and we know that provides immune support and that people have access to it. And as I mentioned, the whole concept of self-care, really taking responsibility for your health, we think that's what this is all about. But there's no question that that the science is really strong about these products providing immune support. And so, you know, but again, we do know that physicians are using our products as treatment.
Well, that's important in this, from the standpoint that the doctors must have the confidence and belief in the product that it's going to do what it's going to do, then they're telling their patients to take it. And you don't need a prescription to buy this. You can go to empoweryourself.info and you can buy it from you through the website. So the fact that it doesn't require a prescription doesn't mean that it isn't effective, because if you look at the components of both products, they're predominantly all natural products. And that seems to be something that's gaining in concern, is what do we know about the long-term implications of any vaccine that we're taking, whether it's for COVID or anything else. You've got a lot of research done on your product, and the fact that it's all natural could help a lot of people.
Well, I think again, and let me start by just the kind of the general concept, Dan, of self-care. You're hearing this term a lot, and it really, I think, is taking root in people that really care about their health and really want to kind of take control of it, rather than just, you know, relying on their doctor or relying on, you know, whoever they're going to talk to in the aisle at the store. And it's a combination maybe of, you know, traditional medicine and, you know, conventional Western medicine, but also supplementation, including our CV Defense and CV Acute products and other really common sense approaches that really all fold into a self-care program for any individual. And we see that as really people just, you know, taking control of their life and their health. And this is part of it.
So unfortunately, Joe, we're almost out of time. Tell the audience where they can follow your company and what's going on.
Sure. Thank you. Well, the name of the company is CV Sciences, and the website is cvsciences.com. If you want to visit us, you can learn more about all of our products, including our immunity products, CV Defense and CV Acute.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Dan.
If you missed any of this terrific interview with Joe Dowling, the CEO of CV Sciences, you can listen to it and his previous interviews by going to W420RadioNetwork.com. Go to the archives section and you'll find interviews with Joe Dowling. Go listen to him. You'll learn a lot. We'll be right back.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on W420RadioNetwork.com.
Welcome back to the conversation, and joining us today is our old friend Morgan Fox from the National Cannabis Industry Association, and we've got a lot to talk about. Hello, Morgan. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me again.
You're welcome. It's always a pleasure. I saw yesterday an article online that Chuck Schumer has indicated that he wants to bring up in the Senate major changes in cannabis law in this term. Do you read what he's saying, that same thing?
Yeah, absolutely. And we haven't seen the legislation yet. I think currently the next steps are for the leaders of that legislation, which would be Chuck Schumer, Ron Wyden, and Cory Booker, are going to be hearing from stakeholders and interested parties in terms of what they'd like to see in the legislation. But it looks as if it's going to be a descheduling bill of some sort, probably at least partially modeled on the Moore Act and partially modeled on Senator Schumer's earlier cannabis legislation. But again, we don't really have enough of the details yet. I don't think that they're set in stone. But it's absolutely a heartening message that that we're hearing in terms of, at the very least, being able to have hearings on cannabis policy issues in the Senate in the coming term.
For almost a year and a half on a regular basis, you're probably the most frequent guest on the show because it's important of your association. But I want to say, and you can disagree with me, I want to say up until prior to the election that the consensus of the many, many people that I've talked to on this show is that it was going to be some period of time before we saw any significant cannabis reform. And I think that there are an awful lot of people in various aspects of this business who might have been caught off guard about what happened yesterday and the speed at which things could happen. A lot of people in this industry, I don't think, are prepared for the possible changes that could take place.
Well, I think that some people might have been a little bit caught off guard by how quickly the Senate had started signaling that it wanted to prioritize this issue. We knew that it was going to be up there, but you know, I think that there was some question about how quickly it would start to be addressed. But I think it's also important to point out that announcing an intention to introduce a bill is not the same as getting that bill passed. That could take quite some time. But again, I think it's a really it's cause for a lot of optimism and hope that this issue is being addressed so readily. I think that that was in large part due to the work of congressional Democrats in the House after the election with the passage of the Moore Act in that chamber, as well as activists and advocates for cannabis policy reform, really making a concerted effort to raise the priority level of this issue just over the last couple of months, particularly as it relates to the type of criminal justice reforms that the Biden administration is hoping to explore over the coming years.
Do you think what happened to the Moore Act? Did it come to the Senate? Is it on the docket? Is Schumer going to bring it up, or is this potential legislation they're talking about going to supersede it?
So technically, the Moore Act is still in play. I mean, it had to switch lead sponsors because Senator Harris is now Vice President Harris, and she was the lead sponsor in the Senate prior to the change in administration. I think in the House, we're very likely to see a reintroduction of the Moore Act, but with a number of changes. Hopefully with a more robust regulatory structure that we are trying to weigh in on during these upcoming negotiations, but also with some of the language that was amended to the bill the week before the vote in the House in December being stripped out of it. In particular, the provision that would allow federal regulators to ban people who have any sort of felony conviction from getting a federal cannabis business license. That kind of flies in the face of a major intention of the Moore Act. And I think that everybody from the industry to the purely advocate perspective want to see that provision removed.
Do you think, Morgan, that what we're looking at is what's driving this issue of decriminalization? The criminal justice reform is a significant driver behind legalization?
Absolutely. I mean, these are really, really closely intertwined issues. I mean, clearly, legalizing cannabis is not going to address all the criminal justice and social justice issues that we're dealing with in this country, but it is has been a major tool for a lot of the criminal justice abuses that we've seen over the last few decades, And I think it's vital that it be addressed as part of a larger criminal justice reform push. And it's certainly at the top of mind for lawmakers, particularly Democrats. And I think that all lawmakers, including members of the GOP, are also looking at things like tax revenue and job creation in the wake of the economic recession caused by the pandemic.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just want to go back to this criminal justice. If I, as I looked at the new states that have come on in the last couple of years, making cannabis legal in their states, they seem to be also tied with expungement of records and decriminalization and changing of the laws from a criminal standpoint seems to be a very important part that wasn't there several years ago. It's increased in prominence. And that, as you said, the two are married together. And I wonder if that will be the catalyst that will bring about, ultimately bring about the change, criminal justice reform.
Well, I think it's definitely a major part of it, both in terms of practical measures, but also as a catalyst. I mean, this is a conversation that has definitely evolved significantly over the last couple of years in terms of criminal justice reform broadly. But also, I think that there's a whole lot more awareness now than there was even a few years ago about the disproportionate impact that cannabis prohibition has had on marginalized communities. And so the need to address that in legalization legislation has increased accordingly. I always remember looking at the campaign in Colorado back in 2012. In the lead up to that campaign, there was a lot of polling done by proponents to try to determine exactly what sort of criminal justice reforms they could include in that ballot initiative, and particularly expunging old records and things like retroactive amnesty. And unfortunately, the voters pretty resoundingly showed in this polling that inclusion of such measures would likely kill that ballot initiative. Fast forward less than 10 years, and you can't have a conversation about legalizing cannabis without talking about social equity in the industry and repairing the harms caused by prohibition. I think that's a wonderful evolution on the topic, and I think that it's only going to become more central to this discussion as we get closer to real national policy change as well as at the state level.
So, Morgan, I understand the desire to want to deal with criminal justice reform. But another piece of it, and you mentioned it in passing, but I want to spend a moment or two. That is, in some newer states that have got on, minority ownership of licenses seems to be a growing issue, a growing concern. I don't know that that's equity per se, but there seems to be more and more concern that the blacks have been left out of the economic opportunity for cannabis. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, a lot of this is because of the disproportionate impact of prohibition in terms of saddling people with lifelong criminal records and damage to the community that occurs when people are incarcerated, making it difficult for people to find jobs and education because of drug convictions, the deterioration or complete lack of generational wealth that has been built up in marginalized communities. Ensuring that there's equal representation and that there some of these resources that are generated by a newly legal market, if not all of them, are going towards restoring the harm caused by prohibition are really vitally important. Unfortunately, a lot of the, despite the fact that this is becoming more central to the conversation, a lot of the tools and methods that have been used to address it haven't really been that effective. So I think it's, really a matter of people learning from the, mistakes and failures, as well as the successes of a lot of these existing state and local programs be applied to any new legislation or new programs that are being developed. I think that there's long road to get to true equity and representation in the industry, as well as repairing those harms done by prohibition, but it's it's a learning curve, and I think that right now people are definitely learning about it, and I know that our Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee is working hard at the state level and the national level to help provide us with the tools to inform our work and to help state regulators and state-based and local cannabis industry groups and individual businesses learn how to be better in this area. Obviously there are other problems involved as well, including very high barriers to entry generally in the cannabis industry, at least in legal state markets, in terms of high application fees, extremely limited numbers of licenses, ineffective social equity licensing programs. So there are a lot of hurdles still remaining, and we just really need to focus on chipping away at those as much as we can at every opportunity. You can follow the National Cannabis Industry Association online at thecannabisindustry.org, and we're also on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter.
Thank you for joining us today, Morgan.
Thanks for having me.
Hello, this is Dan Perkins from America's Cannabis Conversation, and I'm here to talk to you about CV Sciences, the company that developed the immune system support products called CV Acute and CV Defense. One of the questions I asked the company was, how safe and effective are these products? Recently, I interviewed Stuart Tonk on my show, and here is his response to my question.
Science supports it. CV Acute and CV Defense are backed by research, cited by the World Health Organization for immune system challenges. It's safely used in hospitals. That's right, CV Acute is safely used in hospitals in Europe and in China.
If you want a productive immune system, you need to purchase both CV Defense and CV Acute. You can find out more information about both of these products at empoweryourself.info. Empower yourself and take charge of your response to COVID-19. You have the power to control yours and your family's health care.
Welcome back to America's Cannabis Conversation, and our doctor, Dr. Jordan Tischler, is in the studio talking with us today, continuing of our previous conversation about dealing with pain management and how cannabis can use it. So, doctor, I'm going to put you on the spot. The idea of an older group of people like myself are having trouble with their general practitioners, their doctors, when they talk to them about the possibility of whether or not cannabis would work in their pain management. And I said to you previously that my wife had hip surgery. And when we talked to the doctor about pain management, he did a Jekyll and Hyde when she mentioned the possibility of cannabis. And he was rude, I think would be a fair discussion. So, doctor, how do we as patients who want to take more control of our own care find a doctor who has the compassion to help us find whatever the treatment is necessary? How do we go about doing that? And then how do you as a practitioner decide which strain of cannabis that you need to treat somebody with for pain?
These are great questions. I'm not sure we're going to get through all of them in a 10-minute segment, but let me see what I can say in that period of time. The first thing I would say is I'm sorry that your wife had this negative interaction with her surgeon. There's really no excuse for his being rude, other than the fact that he's a human being like anyone else and perhaps felt uncomfortable with this discussion, largely, I would guess, because he doesn't know very much about it. The reality here is that many physicians don't know a whole lot about it. I would like to think that most of them, in not knowing much about it, would get to the point where they would educate themselves a little bit about it, and not necessarily that they would prescribe it for your wife, for example, because they may still feel out of their league, but at least know enough to say this is a legitimate medicine and here's somebody I trust as your doctor to send you to who can help you with the details. So what I call that is a cannabis specialist, and I started an organization a while back called the Association of Cannabis Specialists, and the goal there was to find doctors who knew this stuff and who cared and would be present and and helpful to their patients, specifically around cannabis care. And that's been pretty successful. So let me give you some more information. The Association of Cannabis Specialists is available on the web at cannabis-specialist.org. Again, cannabis-specialist.org. And on that site, amongst many other things that you might want to explore, is a directory of doctors who not only are members, but in becoming members, are up to speed on the data, and most importantly, have taken a pledge to treat their patients in an ethical manner, which means not only knowing about cannabis, but also not being sort of the kind of doctor that's just going to give you a card and then say, go talk to the 20-year-old bud tender. You know, to your question about strains and such like that, that's a much longer discussion, but I'm going to try to encapsulate it very quickly and simply say strains are not important. Strains are a marketing device for selling weed. So this is something that your cannabis specialist should be sitting down and talking over with you. Dosing and route of administration, those are very important for getting the best result for pain relief or any other symptom that we're treating with cannabis. But the strains themselves really are just chemically too similar for there to be a significant medical difference. Now, that doesn't mean that people don't develop a preference for one over the other, but it's not the same as did it help your back pain, which is really a medical outcome. And so I think that this leads us into a potentially another segment for another day, which is sort of the smoke and mirrors that are involved in the industry and the ways in which those things sell lots of product but aren't necessarily to the best advantage of patients who are not looking for something that's kind of interesting. They're really looking for something that's reliable and effective. And it's so I would argue that patients and recreational users are both equally legitimate but have very different needs and therefore need very different treatment and different products and such like that. And that's not something the industry has really got a good handle on at the moment.
Let me follow that with a question, if I might.
I can put in one sentence quickly.
Sure.
Back right on ahead. Your wife. One of the things that often gets brought up at the dispensary is CBD, right? And CBD, we could do a whole segment on that. But just thinking about your wife, and you mentioned some blood thinners and such like that, CBD is contraindicated for her. The bud tender, who's a 20-year-old, who, at least in Massachusetts, where I'm familiar with the regulations, is required to have a high school diploma or equivalent and nothing more, is likely to say, if you say, I have hip pain, here's a bottle of CBD. But that's actually potentially dangerous for your wife and for many other patients if they're taking it and taking enough of it. So, again, I often say, look, the bud tenders mean well. They're nice people. They're very friendly. But basically, they are educated on the subject to the level of a Starbucks barista. So if you wouldn't ask your barista your health questions, probably you shouldn't be asking the bud tenders.
Well, that brings up a question, and that is, in the 11 states where adult use is legal, you don't need a doctor, you don't need a prescription to buy cannabis in the dispensary. So do we have a risk of self-medication with people who really don't know what they're doing?
Absolutely. At some point, we have a unique situation in that here is a substance that has true medical benefit as well as true recreational benefit and is sort of more or less freely available. And so, yes, we can definitely find ourselves in the position where not only patients may choose to self-medicate, but there's a huge amount of marketing pressure with lots of dollars behind it who are, you know, which is out there trying to convince people that they should self-medicate or that they should get their advice from the bud tender. And the problem with that is that fundamentally the reason that marketing is going on is because that sells more weed. Whereas if you go to the doctor, who tends to be, shall we say, thoughtful and conservative and really focusing on precision dosing, that tends to actually lead to less use. And so there is a little bit of a conflict there, and that, you know, that there's a lot of messaging that's going to point sick people in the wrong direction. And I see this a lot because, of, you know, sometimes patients come to me and I tell them, you know, here's what I think you need to do. And then they go to the store and the store people tell them something else, and that invariably doesn't end well. Or alternately, they went, like you mentioned, sort of through the recreational system, or maybe they got a card from some other doctor who didn't give them any guidance, and then they use it, and it doesn't work, or they feel sick, or any of those sorts of things. Then they come to me. They say, Doc, I tried all this stuff. What happened? And then I look at what they tried, and it's either something that I would have predicted is ineffective, dangerous, or just way too much. So I think that, you know, there is that conflict between what the industry would like people to do and what's sort of really medically best for them. And I guess at the end of the day, it's going to come down to each patient having to think this through for themselves. And I'm hopeful that, as you say, most of this group are older people with some maturity. And I hope that most of them will look at their doctors, particularly their cannabis specialist, as somebody that they are going to for advice and guidance, and value that advice and guidance so that then they end up with, you know, best outcome.
So we've been talking with Dr. Jordan Tischler, our cannabis doctor on call. And one more time, doctor, how can people get a hold of you?
You can find me on the web at inhalemd.com, or you can call at 617-477-8886.
So we've got about a little more than 2 minutes left in this program, and I want to ask you the question. One of the things I put up front was, how do you decide which product a person should use, or does it make any difference?
I mean, if we're going to generalize to product more so than strains, it absolutely does make a difference. And I would start with the idea that, you know, there are different types of pain. And what product we use and how we use it depends a little bit on what we're treating. So somebody who has pain, for example, from something that's acute and episodic, like a migraine headache, those people, generally speaking, would do best with cannabis by inhalation. And the reason for that is inhaled cannabis has a very quick onset, which is good if you're having a horrible migraine come on. It also doesn't last super long, lasts about 3 or 4 hours, which if your headache has now gone away, it's good for the medicine to kind of go away. On the other hand, somebody who has osteoarthritis of their spine and who's miserable kind of 24/7 as a result, that's somebody where the quick onset, short duration is going to lead to kind of a yo-yo effect. I feel better, it wore off. Oh, now I took some more, I feel better again. Up, down, up, down. That's not generally thought to be a good approach to pain control. So something that we take by mouth, which has kind of the opposite characteristics to the inhaled stuff, in that it's slow to start working, but when it works much longer, like 8 to 12 hours, that's going to give us more of that continuous pain coverage that we're really looking for, that allows people to take the medicine and then go on about their lives.
Well, so that you may be able to get the same strain in an edible or oil or something you can smoke and vape or not. I don't know about that. I know it's been banned in Massachusetts for a while. But so it sounds like what you're saying, depending upon the kind of pain you're trying to treat, then you have to have more concern about the delivery system, how you get it into your system and how your system manages it, than what brand of cannabis it really is.
Yes, that's absolutely
true.
The route of administration is hugely important, and the dosing is really important. You know, if you get your advice from somebody who's a heavy user, they're going to say, you know, go ahead and use like I use. But that's going to be too much for somebody who isn't, you know, a long-term user. And it's also more than is likely necessary. Again, from a medical approach, you know, less is more. What we want is to find that sweet spot right at the place where we get the maximum benefit with a minimum of side effects. And the side effects that we really need to think about primarily is that intoxication. All medicines have side effects, and cannabis is no different. Cannabis can cause some intoxication, and that's just a side effect we need to manage. We have to view it that way so it's not upsetting or concerning. And I think that the key is that if we're dosing this properly, that place where we're getting maximum benefit is effective for the pain or whatever else we're treating. And quite frankly, that modicum of intoxication really isn't all that impressive or intrusive. And it's the sort of thing that once you're over sort of the initial concerns about it, it doesn't bother people any longer.
So this has been just great conversation. It was everything that I hoped it would be. And I appreciate your time and great. Your interest in our listeners. Just in case, ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't hear all of today's interview with Dr. Jordan, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com, and you can find the archive section and download this show and the previous show, and look for notifications about the next visit from the doctor on call, Dr. Jordan Tischler. Thank you so much for your help and your advice and your time today. Welcome back to the conversation, and joining us again are Mike and Cullen, our two money guys. And we've had him on a couple of times before, and I keep coming up with questions, so we've invited him back for a third time, and they'll be a regular reoccurring group for us. So, Mike and Cullen, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for having us, Dan.
We spent the last two visits you had with us talking about changes that are going to take place should something positive come out of the movement that Schumer and other people in the Senate are talking about the cannabis business. And we've talked about the possibility of how banking might change and how the players may change. And it could be one of the best, fastest growing and biggest growing markets in the world, because it's already got a base of illicit business, depending on your perspective, 50 to 70 billion. But I want to go a little bit different direction. Prior to the pandemic, if you got a license to build a dispensary and sell product, the model that was being used for building a dispensary was the Apple Store. And depending upon how sophisticated and how big your space is going to be, I've had people who are in the business of building these stores saying you can spend anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million. I saw about 3 months ago where an operator had three stores built, had leases to build two more, and he spent $750,000 per store to open the first three stores. And for an evaluation purposes, they only valued him at $350,000. One of the things that I've noticed through this pandemic, because cannabis was considered to be an important dispensary, was an important business that it could stay open, the whole delivery system of how we bought cannabis and how we buy cannabis has changed. Home delivery is a huge business in California and in Colorado. And as we go with more and more states, I think there's going to be a fundamental change in how we as consumers buy it, whether it's online through an Amazon or, as one guy up in the state of Washington is using drones to deliver it, the need for the brick-and-mortar store may be rapidly dying. What do you think?
And something that most folks aren't talking about, Dan, I couldn't agree more. I think that the pandemic has certainly gotten people more comfortable with the process of ordering and having cannabis delivered directly to their homes. And on top of that, you've seen dispensaries that have much more quickly transitioned into being able to provide menus that you can order and order online and get delivered to your home. But in similar to every other industry where you would have otherwise had to go to a brick and mortar, we're seeing them shift to delivery services and quickly, and the pandemic has only accelerated that. And Mike and I have been talking about this for quite a while, but dispensaries up until the pandemic were commonly seen as one of the most valuable assets that you could have in cannabis because it was the fastest path to revenue and was high margin for your business because you could sell your own products through it. In the future, that's going to change as the model does, and delivery will be a big part of the future for this industry.
You know, gentlemen, I had an opportunity to interview a gentleman who I got on the show a number of times. He's very innovative in Canada. And he got, his company got the okay from the Canadian government to work directly with consumers and delivering the products to their homes. So they have eliminated an intermediary dispensary. You just said, Colin, that dispensaries put in delivery services. They eliminated the dispensary model. And they're doing it under the control of the Canadian government. And when I spoke to him about it, he thinks that that's where we're headed, and it's home delivery. But he thinks that what's going on is that the amount of time that people have spent studying the drug, meaning consumers, and what they've been able to call from the websites of the dispensaries, they're more comfortable about making the decision about what they want to buy. And so the need to go into a dispensary and discuss with a budmaster is something that's rapidly dying out. So an Amazon model for distribution or a home delivery dispensary, he thinks is, as you said, Colin, the wave of the future, and it could be coming quickly, because the longer the pandemic continues to linger, and now they're talking maybe into the end of 2021, early 2022, before we can go back to whatever was normal, I think that that there's a possibility that this could delivery could be a less costly, and you guys can tell me if I'm wrong, a less costly entry into the cannabis business, and that creates opportunities for a whole different group of people to get in. What do you think about that?
Well, you made a good point just sort of in that analogy about, as I view it, it's sort of who actually owns the customer. The person doesn't actually need to talk in a physical location to a bud tender to find the product they want. And instead they're, I guess, ordering online or researching what's effectively a virtual bud tender, if they're looking down a list of reviews or what have you, or even, you know, actually chatting with someone virtually, you don't necessarily need that physical location. But I think what's going to increasingly become important over time is having some more brand equity where, you know, they're not just looking for a strain. They're looking for, you know, a specific product. They're not just looking for, you know, to use like a coffee analogy, they're not just looking for, you know, a latte. They're looking for a Starbucks latte specifically. You know, so any company that can, on a more wholesale basis, have that sort of wholesale brand and deliver, you know, a consistent experience, through a consistently delivered product, sort of the way that product is delivered almost doesn't even matter, right? If they're buying it out of the store, or if they're buying it, you know, through a delivery system, or if they're even buying it, what sounds like you're doing is, what you're talking about in Canada is actually more of a direct, you know, direct to consumer from a wholesale supplier model almost.
Right.
You know, that's
right.
Sort of ultimately who will win. You know, the dispensary model, is in part from different local regulations that were, you know, designed in certain respects, but, you know, ultimately you're just delivering a product to a consumer, and, you know, if it's more convenient to have that on every street corner versus, you know, having it delivered to you, semi-regularly, then it'll, you know, that it'll shift to the way that's legal and the customers want.
Let me give you, gentlemen, let me give you an analogy that I've been thinking about. Look what has happened because of the pandemic about the explosive growth of telemedicine. We have a gentleman on our show, Dr. Tischler, and he had two offices in Boston. He's gone 100% to telemedicine, and he actually believes that the customers are happier because they're talking from their own home environment. I suspect that you could take the telemedicine model and create online gurus who can help you figure out what cannabis you need and tell you where what you need, a brand, or as you said, Colin, and then you just go on the line and you buy it and they have it delivered to you. Almost totally eliminating the need for dispensaries. The benefit also being you don't have these centers where you have the opportunity of illegal activity and robberies and everything else by the retail presence of a dispensary. You change the crime situation, change a lot of things. What do you think about that?
I mean, everybody wins in this situation, right? With the exception of, of course, the operators that own the dispensaries. But in reality, dispensaries are a cost center for these operations. And there's a limited mm-hmm. margin that you can have over the long term for any given dispensary, because ultimately you're going to be selling a set of commoditized, relatively commoditized products, with the exception of a handful of brands that you're stocking. So whereas right mm-hmm. now you might have some demand-driven pricing power in these operations, being able to deliver to clients, you don't have the overhead of having that brick and mortar. And as you noted, Dan, the cost of being able of having to store a bunch of cash in your vault in your dispensary and paying somebody right. in an armored truck to pick it up every week drastically mm-hmm. will be outstripped by having an obscure warehouse you're keeping all your products in that you're paying much lower lease for and distributing directly to the customer that no longer has to go to a store. Doesn't seem like anybody really loses in that equation.
This telemedicine model, this internet model, this distribution to you is going to ring out, or is it going to ring out a lot of costs? And you mentioned, Colin, you mentioned about brands. There is no dominant brand. And that's why in a previous show, I asked you the question about major marketing brands. And you know, you could look at Procter & Gamble. You could look at Amazon. You could look at a lot of different consumer products companies who could be are in the business of establishing a brand, could establish their own brands of cannabis products and market that brand for whatever they want to, and then sell it anywhere in the world that they can get to distribute the product.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the long term. That's sort of the long term goal. Eventually, I would just clarify that, at least in my mind, a brand is not just a logo and a name. It's basically the repeated positive experience or repeated experience with consumers over time, where you know exactly the effect and the service, the thing you're going to get when you buy something. Like, to use Starbucks again, like, I know exactly what a Starbucks coffee will taste like regardless of where I buy it. It's the same at every mm-hmm. single Starbucks, no matter where I go. The trick right. with flower at this point is that since it's more of a raw agricultural product, you know, different batches can vary, right? It's like when you go to the supermarket and you're like, oh, the bananas don't look so good today. They look great last week. I'll wait a week, you know, and then mm-hmm. wait till they look better. But in the processed product realm, I think it'll be easier, frankly, just to have a more engineered, repeatable process in a processed product like an edible or tinctures or what have you, where the product can be engineered to be, they know exactly how much THC and CBD and terpenes of every kind is in each batch of product, so you engender that consistency. Right. So whenever you buy it, you know exactly what you're going to get. I think if you get that,
right.
then the tele model is real easy in terms of, I order this, it shows up tomorrow, and I know exactly what it's going to be like and what exactly it's going to do.
Right. Absolutely. Well, gentlemen, believe it or not, we're out of time again. It's been a pleasure and fascinating for me to talk to you about what's happening in this business that we're all in, and it's moving very rapidly. Tell people, Mike and Colin, how they can follow your organization.
You can read everything we're writing over at mjresearchco.com. So mjresearchco.com. And you can email us at mikeandcolin@mjresearchco.com.
So, gentlemen, thank you for joining our show today. It was a terrific interview. Thank you for joining us, and we'll have you back again soon.
Thanks for having
us. Nice to talk to you.
If you missed any of this interview, you need to go to W420RadioNetwork.com, go to the archive section, and look for Colin and Mike, America's Cannabis Conversation.
Introducing CV Defense for daily immune support with PEA. PEA backed by 6 double-blind clinical trials. Reishi Mushroom Extract. A proprietary blend of immune-supporting ingredients. Non-GMO, gluten-free, vegan, exclusively from CV Sciences. Go to empoweryourself.info.
Thank you for taking part in America's Cannabis Conversation. W420RadioNetwork.com.